Hello, guys, and welcome to the latest edition of the Blacks Being Global podcast. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Lucy.
And yeah, guys, we have a special guest joining us today.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod, Tamani Carrio. How are you doing?
Hello, hello. I'm good, thank you.
Happy
you?
Sunday.
Happy Sunday, happy Sunday.
I should say congratulations for Arsenal's victory.
Here comes the football fans.
Yeah, North right, London guys. Derby. But tennis. Yeah, we're not a football podcast, but congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to next weekend, first versus second. But we'll talk about that another time. Maybe. Yeah.
not the time.
It's been a while, Tamani.
It has.
Yeah, you actually, you have not been on the pod for a minute.
I think since Wimbledon, we did a pod together.
Yeah, we did a pod.
Oh, yeah, because I was at my...
Exactly.
Yeah, it was my little brother's birthday.
Yeah. But yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
How are you like doing in terms of just in general?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, it's been actually since the US Open, which was obviously when we saw each other last. I've been home for the first time in a while. Like normally I'd like go to other tournaments, cover a few events, but I just like decided like, if ever there was going to be a time when I just spend a few months at home, it was going to be this time, particularly with like, you know, Draper out. It felt like, you know, I mean, it didn't feel like the tour, on the men's tour at least, like everything was so dominated by Alcaraz and Sinner that, you know, that felt like the main storyline and not much else in a way. So for that reason, you know, I just thought, let's stay at home. I spent the last like couple months playing tennis, like literally like 4 or 5 times a week with Eugene a lot.
Love that. It's been very good.
All good.
You didn't cover the ATP Tour Finals, did you?
No.
But you covered it from home. Yeah, from home. Yeah. Like how did you find that quickly? Just in terms.
I mean, it's kind of similar. No, it was all about those two players. There was, you know, between Sinner and Alcaraz, they lost one set before the final. And that was Alcaraz against Fritz. Great match, but Alcaraz still like came through. Yeah. Aside from that, like they're so much better than the rest of the field at the moment.
So
that's it, really.
I think we should just get into like some of the news quickly before kind of getting into a rundown of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest story for us was Christopher Eubanks announcing his retirement. I've said he's the nicest guy in tennis. I think most people would agree with that.
Mm.
But yeah, he's announced his retirement. Well, is it really a retirement?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he left the door open a bit, you know.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw the post, I didn't react. I was just like,
same.
Because I was like, this does not really say whatever. But I was supposed to listen to the Quig served pod with Andy Roddick because he did talk about it there. But from the sound of it, it's like, he's going to be doing broadcasting.
Exactly.
So I think that's why he left it that way. It's like, yeah, I'm not going to be playing tennis, but you're going to see me around. And that's why when I saw the announcement, I was happy because I was like, okay, we're going to get like, you know, another new person in this broadcasting world.
Yeah.
And everyone has always talked about how good he is at doing the job. So in a way, it's like, okay, it's good. And to be honest, I think, has he said it? Well, he said it to us after the interview that we did with him last year. And I remember him saying, like, if this tennis thing don't work, I'm going to go for, like, broadcasting as well. So that's why when I saw it, I was like, okay, yeah, he's definitely doing this thing full time, which makes sense anyways. Yeah. He's done what he had to do. It's not by force.
29 years old. Like, I think retirement is, like, an achievement in terms of just in general. And I feel like... Yeah, for someone to like announce over time and at 29, like that's a pretty bossy move. Like I feel,
but I feel like only in tennis you can really do that as well.
And sports in general, I
true,
guess.
Yeah,
like,
as you get older.
Yeah, but like you said, he's got like a ready-made career, like
exactly
already, like after tennis. Like just quickly, like any kind of thoughts on Christopher? I know you have kind of a relationship.
Yeah. I mean, kind of similar to what you said. Like I think he's a very nice guy. It's been an amazing story, him coming from college and, you know, breaking into, you know, he spent...
Georgia Tech.
Yeah. He spent some time on the Challenger circuit, but then had that big breakthrough in 2023.
Yeah.
And I mean, for a period there, he was like the biggest story in tennis, you know, in the grass season. You know, making the second... I think he made the second week of Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
quarterfinals, yeah.
Beat Tsitsipas Nori, I believe.
Incredible.
But he's, I think in the past year, as you said, like he's been doing a lot more broadcasting. Also, like even, you know, like the on-court interviews at the US Open, like he was like, it wasn't just like sitting in the booth, like he was doing a lot of different things. And I think he got like, there was a great kind of reception, and I think he showed just how intelligent he is and how smart and how like well he speaks about the game.
Mm-hmm.
So like he's done a good job of like creating that kind of area for him, like before he decided to step away.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard of like some players who were like, who retired and were trying to get a foot in that world and doing some, you know, doing certain things to make it happen, paying money to get their name in, you know.
Let's not mention any names.
I won't say who at all. But he's like just showing it with his, you know, how he speaks about the game and
exactly.
And so yeah, I'm excited to see how he does and to see more of him and to see more of him around our
definitely.
Our world.
Exactly.
But also I guess like yeah, he also has, it seems like he has like left the door open. Maybe in 2 years he'll be
true.
Like I miss this and
that's
true. Yeah, it's possible.
That's
I mean,
kind of how I feel. Like really? I feel like he's gonna come back.
I think he released it like that more of a way of like, okay, I'm not gonna be playing, but you're gonna see me around. I think he's gonna kill it with the broadcast.
Well, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And also, he's very like, for example, remember he was the only player apparently that who actually read the full Senna case and into Diaz. So that's what
down.
I'm saying. So like, he's really going to be in it. So I think, I don't know. I don't see him going back to play.
We'll see.
At least now we've got a Wimbledon ticket plug.
Again, obviously, since we've been off, we had the ATP Tour Finals, which we previewed it, but we didn't review it.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, Tamani, it was Jannik Sinner that defended, beating Carlos Alcaraz in the final. I don't think Sinner dropped a set, did he?
No, he's not dropped. He didn't drop a set in his last two ATP finals. He's won 20 sets in a row at the ATP finals against the best players in the world.
It's wild. And to be fair, like shouts out to Alina Rybakina as well, because she also didn't drop a set en route to winning the WTA Tour finals.
Mm.
I quite like that kind of dominance.
She dropped a couple sets of it. The Swiatek.
Did she drop a?
That was three sets.
But in the final she was dominant.
Yeah,
against
yeah,
Sabalenka.
That final, she was.
But I like the dominance in terms of Sinner. Obviously, he's the world number two. Alcaraz is the world number one. But there's like, in terms of like the disparity between them and the rest, it's like a massive, massive gap.
I didn't watch the final. I just had whatever in it. Like, I was like, I'm actually tired. I'm bored of this. But when I saw the picture that it was Sinner who won, I said, like, when you actually sit down and think about it, this is actually insane. Like 3 months suspension. And it's not even just like you're out of the game completely. Like even mentally, that takes like a lot. So he had like 3 months where he just had to just keep still, come back. And he gave us one of the best matches ever at Roland Garros. You come and take all these big titles, beating all these people, and then you still win the ATP fight. Like, it's actually crazy. Like, it's really crazy.
It is wild.
Because I actually thought Carlos was going to pick up that trophy. But then he was on that Fritz match. Yeah.
I think we both said Carlos to win the whole
thing. I think so. Yeah, yeah. We both said it.
Who did you have?
I think I thought Sinner. Just because of indoors. Like, I mean, now he's won like 31 matches in a row indoors. It's crazy.
That's true.
The head to head, though, as well, between them, it's 10-6 in Alcaraz's favor.
I mean, that was a big, big win for him over Alcaraz, given that, Alcaraz won like 7 of the last 8 going into that final. Yeah. So.
And I think all their meetings this year have all been finals.
Yeah.
It's just.
And that's why Roger Federer said what he said.
Stop it. Stop it.
Quickly, do you believe that?
In terms of the court speed?
The court speed.
Not really, just because I feel like even last year they weren't 1 and 2. So like this has happened really quickly in a way. Like it's gone from them being like the best players in the world, but still like they weren't playing each other every week. True. And now suddenly the past like 6 months, like it's crazy how just quickly it's got. Yeah. Now we just expect them to face each other in the finals. But I don't think the tournament directors were, you know, planning ahead that far to, you know, thinking. I mean, I'm talking about more what Zverev said, that, you know, they're all, you know, the courts are slowing down to suit the top two.
Nonsense.
But yeah.
just Felix Auger-Aliassime, we should give him his props as well. We will talk about more. We'll talk more about his season in depth in a bit. But just reaching the semi-finals, that was his second appearance at the ATP Tour Finals.
Is that what he did?
He, huh? I inject it. Incredible celebration. But yeah, I was really impressed with Felix, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I just feel like he's obviously now back up to what is he, number five in the
number
world?
Number five. First time ever.
Career high.
Yeah.
Like I said, we'll talk more about his season in a bit, but yeah, he definitely needs a shout out for his run at the ATP Tour Finals.
Yeah.
Another player who we need to quickly talk about. So Victoria Mboko, she helped Canada secure a spot in next year's Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers. So she won all of her matches. She played two singles matches and a doubles match, won all of them in straight sets.
Nice.
This year, she also made her Billie Jean King Cup debut. And as far as I believe, she's unbeaten, basically, in Billie Jean King Cup ties, like, which is just insane.
Yeah.
For a 19-year-old. Her season, again, has been just ridiculous.
She got a key to her city week as well. Yeah.
Love that.
I forgot the name of which Canadian city it is.
Love that.
But she got the keys, which is really impressive considering that she's so young and, yeah.
But just, well, again, we'll talk more about Mboko later on, but like I said, this is a review of the season. Let's start with the Grand Slam. So, Australian Open, you were there, Tamani.
Yep.
Madison Keys, she was the 19th seed.
Mm.
And she secured that title, her first Grand Slam. It was Jannik Sinner that won the men's title. That was his third Grand Slam, I believe.
Yes.
And then Taylor Townsend and Katerina Siniakov, they won the doubles title. But just on the Aussie Open, just quickly, like, for you guys, what was your, I don't know, biggest highlight in terms of that tournament, if you can think back?
There was two things, which I think one thing is going to surprise you guys. Francesco?
João.
Yeah. That was a match where he beat Rublev.
Yeah, first round, yeah.
That was very impressive. I'm not going to lie. I remember watching that match thinking, who is this kid in that forehand? Like, it was really, really good. Like, the energy was great. That was a start of, like, I mean, I started knowing more about him at the next gen ATP finals. Because Astro Feast was there, and he won it, right? Yeah,
he won it.
Yeah, he won the thing. And I was like, okay, yeah, he's good. But that Rublev match, it was just something else. So him coming in the scene was definitely a highlight. But obviously, Keys picking up that trophy and having to beat the first seed and second seed, the way she whacked Iga on that court. Unbelievable. Like, honestly, like, she just played really, really good tennis. That was the thing as well, is that she had like a great run and it was just a great final. So yeah, those two were definitely my favorite moments.
She's funny.
For me, it's Keys. And just the way she beat them as well. Svjontek and Sabalenka back to back.
Yeah.
Like, two really tight matches, two of the best matches of the year.
Mm-hmm.
She saved match point against Svjontek.
Yeah.
I think it was like,
I can't remember, but
I think it was like she had a second serve and, like, a good, she put in a good second serve. I can't remember, but like, yeah, she saved match point. Mm. One played insane in the match tiebreak in the final set.
Yeah.
And then came back and like, did the same against Sabalenka, basically, you know, mm-hmm. beat her right at the end. I think it was 7-5 in the third in the final.
Mm.
So unbelievable. And, you know, given that, you know, we've known Keith since she was 14.
Exactly.
You know, she won her first match at 14. She was this, you know, player, this prodigy who was,
yeah,
you know, destined to be a number one, but destined to be a Grand Slam champion in many people's eyes, but that weighed heavily on her.
Yeah.
But so, you know, it took such a crazy route to get to this point, but yeah, that was massive. And also that she'd built up a reputation for losing tight matches as well. And, and like, you know, coming so close,
mm-hmm.
happened against, you know, an example was Sabalenka at the US Open, I think it's 2023,
mm-hmm.
when she was just zoning up, it's just destroying Sabalenka. I think it was like, well, it was like a heavy lead, but
yeah.
then she kind of, it fell away and she lost, and that was, you know, that was almost a traumatic moment for her.
Yeah.
So for her to win the way she did was just unbelievable.
100%, yeah.
No, insane. Yeah. I agree with all those points, to be fair. For me, one of the standout matches was Gael Monfils beating Taylor Fritz.
Yes.
I think it was a five setter.
Yeah.
Monfils was just insane.
Yeah, he was like, F them kids. Monfils, he had GMP, and I remember saying, man, uncle, just let him win. And he whacked them all one by one. So
he ended up retiring against Ben Shelton.
Yes.
But yeah, really good to see Monfils playing at that level. And obviously he's another player who's announced his retirement as well.
Yeah.
2026 will be his final season on tour, which would be incredible. We'll talk more about Monfils next year for sure. French Open.
I just wanted to say shout out to Shelton, because that jogged my memory of that match when, you know, the father. So when
Roger Rashid.
Yeah, exactly. When Monfils and Shelton finished the match, Shelton had the on-court interview and the interviewer, Roger Rashid, said like he could be your father, something to that effect. And Shelton was like he was like, what? But he kinda like played it off, and even in the initial press conference, he was still like, you know, he was just, you know, he kind of shrugged it off and joked it off. But clearly, like, when he kind of sat with her and thought about it, he was like, no, what the hell was that?
That's actually crazy.
And then
he said it straight. He was like, are you saying that because I'm black?
And then the
Australian guy tried to, like, you know, roll back. And it's like, no, I don't know what was it in Australia this year.
Yeah, that was,
but they
that
won.
Was crazy.
They were, Novak is overrated.
I forgot that. Yeah.
Who actually does? That's not for you doing a group chat with your friend. You don't do it as an actual broadcaster or team. Yeah. Novak is overrated.
Yeah, just like to explain, that was the Aussie broadcaster. Two like Djokovic fans who were cheering behind him. It was crazy. I was going to say shout out to Shelton, because then after his next match, he then like gave us a statement at the end where he like was like directly criticized the broadcasters. And I also appreciated that he made a distinction between like those interviewers who, like he said, like people who didn't, like he doesn't know them, but they're acting
like boys. Not,
But he made a distinction between them and us journalists. So. So I appreciate that even more.
Broadcasters. Yeah.
The French Open, Coco Gauff securing a second slam title, Grand Slam. Carlos Alcaraz winning that epic final against Jannik Sinner. And yeah, Paolini and Irani winning their first Grand Slam as a pair.
Mm-hmm.
Again, French Open for you, Lucy. Biggest highlight.
You know, man.
Goes about saying.
I don't need to chat. I actually don't need to chat. Like, that is it. No, it was just... like till now when I think about it, I'm like, nah, that was actually such a highlight. I think it's also because it's the way that her clay season actually went, back-to-back finals, and she was playing like, it was just a different Coco. Like, she really, when she posted all like her manifestations and everything made sense, because you could tell that her energy was like different. And that is why even before going to Roland Garros, I was like, I think she's actually going to pick this thing up. Like, this is actually going to happen. Every match, it just kept getting better and better. But I think for me, what was more impressive, I felt like a lot of people were really doubting her. It was weird to me, because it was like, but she was playing so well before Roland Garros. So why are you guys counting her out? Do you get what I mean? And the people that she lost to were not useless people. She lost to Sabalenka in the Madrid final. And before that, she beat Igor on her favorite surface. And then Rome Paolini was just on different smoke. Like, she came in saying, I'm not losing this time. Yeah, I'm taking it all. She's at home. So obviously the energy is even more as well. And right before that, Coco gave us like, Coco and Qin Wenzheng, like they gave us that insane match. So that took up all of her body and stuff. So when she came into, and I looked at her draw, I was like, she's taking this. Like, she's really taking this. But it was just such a nice moment. Like, it was really good, especially like a lot of the Americans, Black Americans as well, were doing well. You know, Hayley Baptiste did well, even Frances Tiafoe, who made order to the fourth round for the first time.
Quarter.
So like, everyone was like, it was a really nice moment. And that's why I was even making jokes saying, whoever made that decision at TNT Sports to take the rights of Roland Garros in America, they actually got lucky like crazy. So yeah, and obviously you can't forget about the final. I think what I love the most is that it was one of them matches where even people who don't watch tennis were talking about it and they were watching it. It was crazy. Yeah. It was intense. I can't believe I'm saying it, but I think Roland Garros was my favorite Grand Slam this year, which it's crazy to say.
I think that's a good shout. I think that's a very fair shout. Tamani, yourself?
Yeah, I mean, that was unbelievable slam. Like, just, the women's Roland Garros was like crazy. Yeah. So many amazing matches from the start. You had like Boisson having that crazy run. Unbelievable. Unreal that
exactly.
happened.
Love that name.
Yeah. then obviously Świątek, Sabalenka.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then
true.
And one thing you jogged my memory mentioned in TFO that Coco early in her early round when she forgot her rackets.
Oh yeah.
And then TFO like spent the whole tournament like taking the piss out of her. That was very funny to me.
Yeah.
But then yeah, and then obviously Coco in the final against Sabalenka, like conditions were horrible, windy, you know, just not good for playing top tennis, but Coco like dug in and found a way, and that's what you have to do in the big matches. And I think it was both in terms of, it was massive for her career, like number one, because, you know, she'd heard that, you know, people calling her a fluke, saying, you know, Sabalenka just choked at the US Open, all of that stuff. And, you know, going from winning one slam as you know, although like it's still a massive achievement, but there are players who do that, like Sophia Kennan, for example, but winning two is massive. And then also the fact that she did it against Sabalenka again, and in a similar way where she, you know, was tougher, smarter, played a better match, you know, and just got it done and really like showed that, you know, it's not just about the Sabalenka and her temperament and her, you know, hitting herself off the court, but Goff makes herself really tough to beat and you know, makes you work for every single point. And and that's you know, Sabalenka couldn't match that in the end. So even though it was the conditions were crazy, I thought that was still such a like memorable and fun match. And yeah, of course we saw what happened after with Sabalenka.
With Sabalenka.
You know, going, you know, yeah, in the press conference, like that, probably the most and I say this with love, like I've seen many Serena press conferences when she loses and she's not, you know, she's not happy, but that Sabalenka, that was by far the like most sore loser moment I've seen from a player.
Petulant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I love, like, and the thing is obviously you guys both spoke. I love when I can just be silent and just be like nodding along. Like everyone, both of you were making such great points. And I was like, yes. I can sit here all day just listening to this. Because exactly, for me, the highlight was Coco Gauff. I will say though, I do feel like her fight or her run to the title was kind of overshadowed a bit by Jannik Sinner and Alcaraz in that fight. I feel like that.
Do you
in
feel
terms
like
of,
it?
A little bit. Because obviously it was such an epic match in terms of their five setter, of course. But yeah, again, like you both explained, Coco's run and like the matches she played to get there and the final, yes, it wasn't as high quality as those two, but it was still a very, very good match.
Yeah, it was.
And exactly, she achieved her, you know, that was her second Grand Slam. Like that deserves
100%
to be spoken about.
Yeah.
Hence why we're here doing that.
Yeah.
So I do love anything else to add? Like,
yeah, I mean, can I talk about the men?
Go for it.
Yeah, but like that's the thing that I think it like that kind of was almost became the trend of this year where the women's like it's so competitive right now at the top and there's so many like tough matches. Like as I said, Świątek Sabalenka was like a proper showdown. Świątek was trying to win her fourth Roland Garros title in a row. I think she'd won like, I'm doing the math quickly, like 26 matches in a row at Roland Garros. Crazy. But then Sabalenka beat her in three sets. But then, of course, but on the men's side, like everything just became about the big two, the top
That's
two.
True.
So,
That's
like,
true.
Even though the women's tournament, in my opinion, was, you know, a lot more entertaining
100%.
From the beginning, then you get to the final and just this historic, unbelievable match. Like, what the hell?
How long was it? Was it five?
Five. I think it was like 5 hours, 35 minutes or something.
That is crazy.
No toilet breaks and
that thing.
Just the way
just blood,
it, like,
sweat, and tears.
I still can't believe it. Really, just the fact that Sinner was, you know, completely outplaying Alcaraz.
Yeah.
Up two sets and then up. I think he was up a break in the third set. Oh, he was. Yeah. And then had the match points, triple match points on his serve.
No one
like every single person in that arena believed it was over aside from Alcaraz. And the way he just came back and then, you know, it looked like Alcaraz had kind of taken control and was had the initiative and
yeah.
was going like rolling through to come back and win the match. And then in the fifth set, suddenly, you know, he was up a break in the fifth set, and then suddenly he wasn't anymore. Yeah. And then the level just went, you know, to like, you know, the kind of the crazy stuff you see from the big three, and
yeah.
just maddest thing I've seen. I took a bit. I was like in the stands, and you know, I realized like didn't have a picture of the match, and I just, you know, I just wanted to have a picture of a slam final. So I took a picture where on Sinner's second match point, and then put my phone away quickly to finish my piece, which was already written.
And oh, then, yeah. So when you were writing, did you have to keep on changing about?
Yeah. I had like,
oh my god.
The funny thing is, like, it was fine. Like when, like, I had the initial Sinner winning piece, mm-hmm. and then eventually, like, because it looked like it was changing, it was easy to like change the piece to Alcaraz winning. But then in that fifth set, when Alcaraz, I think he served for it, and
it was him serving.
Yeah,
for it.
in the fifth set, and then it went to 5-all. Mm-hmm. He was like, he broke in the first game, you know, kept the break until 5-3 or something, 5-4, whatever, and then that, at that point, I lost my mind. Like, I didn't know what to write because like,
so you had like what, three different versions of the story?
Probably like four, really. Like,
oh my gosh! That must have been long for all the journalists that day.
But it's just insane. And how do you do that? Come back from three sets against your biggest rival. And if this wasn't against Rev.
Yeah.
This wasn't against like some random, you know, random person.
Yeah.
Like,
it
crazy.
Was crazy. Yeah.
That's the thing. I don't mean to take anything away from Alcaraz at all. Like, because like you said, it was a massive achievement. Mm. And like, he came back from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like, yeah, Goff winning the title was slightly overshadowed a little bit, but that's just a feel. That's just an opinion.
I won't argue with that. I didn't really think about it too much like that. Maybe because I was
so in it,
guys. I was shouting in my bedroom. I don't think you understand. Like, I had to send a message to my housemates, like, guys, I'm sorry. Like, I was so excited. I don't think you understand. That win, yeah, was personal to me. Like, so I think that's why I didn't really feel it like that, but. Also, I won't disagree because, like I said, even people who are not into tennis were watching that match. Mm. Like, it was crazy. So, yeah.
I think any match like that overshadows everything.
That's true. Yeah.
But like, I do think, in a weird way, Sabalenka being so salty and that becoming such a big story actually helped it because people like pushed back. And,
that's true. There was a lot of drama there. That French Open. Yeah. Obviously, no woman matches at night as well. That was a whole different thing. And then the tournament director was just saying, whatever.
Yeah. Like, Emily Maresme, former WTA player.
Wimbledon. So Iga Swiatek winning. That was her first Wimbledon title, her sixth Grand Slam. And Jannik Sinner winning his fourth Slam title.
Mm-hmm.
Just quickly again, Wimbledon for us, always special. That was our third time covering this year.
That was our third time covering this year.
You're veterans.
Biggest highlight for you, Lucy, at Wimbledon?
I think for me was Victoria making her breakthrough for that Wimbledon. So remember, she came as a lucky loser. And it was a nice moment because at one point I was watching Baptiste's match.
Oh, yeah.
And Boko's match was next to it. And then they played against each other like the next round as well. I'll say that I will give credit to Amanda making that because I did not think she would be going like that far. Obviously, not the best of finals, but she got her leg back after, so it doesn't matter anyways. I don't know. This Wimbledon didn't hit me as well. Maybe because we didn't have that many, like, we didn't leave with, that was the only grass that we didn't leave with something.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know. Maybe I didn't really... Obviously, being there as a in person was different. Like, it was, you know, obviously nice having like the interviews and everything. Even Guy Monfils as well. Like, I remember staying in his French interviews. I was also really excited to see Arthur Fils, but obviously he got injured at Roland Garros because he played so well last year at Wimbledon. I actually think he's going to do really well on grass once he feels better. But weirdly, I don't know.
What about you, Tamani? Wimbledon, any highlights?
I mean, just seeing a 6-love, 6-love Slam final was insane in a different way to the French Open. Like, that was the funny thing. Like, it was crazy. But the funny thing is that you know, because it's Swiatek and because she does that to everyone. Like it was, I think it was almost like, it was only like five love and people around me, like other journalists were like, started to like research, when's the last time a Sam, you know, Wimbledon was decided six love, six love. Cause like, you just like, you could kind of see it happening. And so that was just crazy to witness. And I guess we'll talk about it later, but like it ended up, you know, you'll get people saying, oh, women's tennis, you know, a double bagel in a Sam final, this is what happens. But it ended up being like part of the kind of one of the best stories. With, as you said, with Anisimova bouncing back and beating Swiatek twice in a row, the two biggest tournaments left in the season. So, that was crazy to witness.
Her match against Sabalenka as well was really good, Amanda.
A great match.
That
crazy
match
yeah.
was insane. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, and on the men's, I guess, Sinner bouncing back from the French Open final. I think like for most players, that would have killed them. You know, having three match points and losing like that.
Yeah.
Championship points. So, but coming back and then beating Alcaraz and playing like one of his best matches.
Different mentality.
But that's why I felt like Sinner was gonna. I was like, yeah, he's not letting that go. That guy was shaking at the end of that match, that Roland Garros match. I knew he was gonna come in and just take that away straight away.
And from the perspective of black players, and another Monfils, he beat Umber here. He just kept on. I mean, he was like, "I'm leaving here with something. I'm gonna get a big win." That was fun, and you know, I enjoyed speaking to him after that match, and him telling the story about how his interaction with the anti-doping professor when he was younger. So that was fun. Shelton, obviously, continuing his great Grand Slam year. And
Fritz and GMP.
That was first round. Crazy
first
round.
2 days, I think.
Fritz was playing for long. Like, he actually plays a lot.
Yeah. And then Diallo, he played.
Diallo as well. Diallo was really gutted after he lost, but that was still it was a really good match. It was a very good match, I remember, because I think they moved it to court one or something.
Scheduling. US Open again. So Sabalenka, she won. That was her fourth slam, and Alcaraz winning his sixth. Highlights again for us. That was our second US Open covering it this year.
That was a lot.
Highlight for you, Lucy, this year.
That was a lot.
It was a lot. It was a lot.
Should we keep it 100?
I mean, go for it.
I'm going to keep it 100. All right. So this is the thing, Yuji and I have been doing this for 5 years.
Crazy.
This year was definitely the one where we bumped head the most, especially in New York.
It was testing.
It was testing. Although most of it was me. I'll put my hands up. It was me, I was going through it. But we didn't kill ourselves. That's what that matters.
We survived.
We actually got the work done. Especially that it was different for us as well because
doing the visuals.
We did the visuals, which we never used to do. So the editing was even longer. Everything was longer. And you know, US Open, there's no curfew.
Oh God.
It was the longest days. Like I was sick. I remember there was one time, literally, I stayed in as well. Like, no, I stayed in twice. I couldn't do anything. I was like, I can't. Like, I clocked out. But other than that, still enjoyed the honeydews and had our drunk pod. Never doing that again. That was crazy. But in terms of like highlights,
I'm going to go first then. Taylor Townsend for me. Sorry to beat you to it. But, her run in singles and doubles, and I don't want to. We spoke a lot about it, but we spoke at length about obviously the Ostapenko thing. But her beating Mira Andreeva in straight sets on Ash, what a night that was.
Then,
like I said, to reach the final in the women's doubles, obviously they lost to who was it? Gabby Dabowski and Erin Moutliff. Just an insane tournament for Taylor Townsend.
For sure.
And that for me, it kind of showed that she can be a force on the singles tour as well. And I feel like she kind of wants to do that as well as play doubles.
For sure.
She's been saying it.
I mean, also just the way, obviously the Ostapenko situation that became such a massive deal global news, her Instagram following, I think they tripled or something.
She had the most followers after the US Open.
But the fact that she in a way even used it, you know, and kind of continue with that momentum. Yep. As you said, beat Andreeva.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the fourth round, man. You remember, we're sitting next to each other. Krejcikova, brutal. But even so, like, she was, you know, she was in the mix. She was, you know, she played great tennis. And
yeah
that was definitely, like, the story of the first week.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I would say, this is going to be random, and this is not black spin, but Bublik waking up or something. Like,
love Bublik.
I'm sorry. I know some of people don't, but I find him very interesting My thing is that this guy, one day he doesn't want to play well, and then the next day he's playing like his life literally depends on it. So it was quite like fun. Obviously, Medvedev in his first round and his outburst.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah.
Like, you know, Alcaraz coming in bold. Like, there were so many things that were happening at the beginning of the US Open.
There was actually a lot going on
the first couple of days. That was so funny. But yeah, those were really, was really nice. I did enjoy also Jallo's matches. There was a lot of like cheering from like the Canadians as well, which was really cool. But yeah, I'll say those were fair. I'm glad that Sabalenka picked up that title, because I actually was worried. I was like, if she loses this would have been a lot, like all back-to-back finals and then you're not picking up like the actual end. You know, trophy. So I'm glad that she actually did win the US
Open. Tough though, again, for Anisimova though. Like, yeah, to I guess fall short in another final.
Yeah. And I think there she was in a way, like, obviously she was upset after Wimbledon, and I mean, what happened, not winning a game was crazy, but I think
to do it so quickly.
Yeah. But I think here, like, she really felt like she was ready and had a chance, and then kind of got outplayed and didn't play her best.
Yeah.
But I think Sabalenka was just really on it and smart Sabalenka's known as, you know, and was like, when she first came on the tour, was like a ball basher and just about power, but she kind of showed, like, she beat Anisimova by showing the rest of her game and how that, you know, she has many more options than a player like Anisimova. So that was really impressive from Sabalenka, particularly as she'd made two semifinals beforehand, a semifinal. She'd come so close. This was her last chance to really win a slam and kind of back up her number one year.
Exactly.
So, do you think it's been a good year for her? Because we spoke about it on the previous pod, and I was like, yeah, I don't feel like finishing the year number one, I don't feel like that is, again, kind of appreciated enough. And like, for me, for her to do that again this year, and win a slam, like, that's a very good year.
Yeah, I think it's been an amazing year for her. I think like winning a slam, number one, unbelievable, and her consistency has just been crazy. The only thing, obviously, is that she wants to like convert those finals and those deep runs into more titles, more big titles.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that's also, you know, she's putting herself in those positions, and it looks like she's going to keep on doing that.
Yeah.
So my memorable moments, which were not first, but Osaka making the semis.
Yep,
I think that was really, like, you know, obviously it was tough for her before she went on maternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last couple of years, like, since she came back at the start of last year, you know, it's been just a lot of near misses, or when she would find form, like in Australia, then she'd get injured. It was just tough. So she, like, she
even
needed
just
something.
Just before she got to the US Open.
That was crazy as well. Mboko, the Mboko match. I think she needed something to really just show her that she can still compete for the biggest titles. And so her making the semis and then having a really tight match against Anisimova there, really tough match. But, I think normally she would, you know, in another part of her career, she would have left that match distraught, right? That she'd missed an opportunity. But she left it thinking like, I'm here, I'm in it, and I can come back to this position in the future and go even further. So that was massive, and she was, you know, the whole Labubu thing, but she was in fun. She was just in a good, you know, whatever.
Mood,
but she was in a good mood and she was happy.
She lost like the semis and stuff, like, she was still like, she came into press, and she was fine. Like, she really like remained like positive, especially such a difference compared to last year, because I watched her documentary, and last year when she lost, like, she literally like was hiding and basically to herself. Whereas this year was like completely different. So
And even like, if you remember Wimbledon, when she lost, I think it was, I can't remember, second round or something. I can't remember.
It was the first round.
First round, yeah. And she was crying. That was when she was crying. Yeah, and she had to
leave, literally.
She left and then came back. And then no one would ask a question. So I asked her the question. And she's like, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was my one of them. And my other one was Medvedev, of course. Like, what a time, man. Like, I'm like a bit of a, and you guys are too, actually, but I'm a bit of like a tennis sicker. So, like, you know, some people, you know, the days are mad long at slams, and as you guys know, and so sometimes you just, like, people just need to get away, right? If none of your national players, for example, are playing in the night session,
yeah,
other journalists will go away. But I was like, you know, I'm just staying.
Just whatever.
And then next thing you know, I'm walking out to Armstrong because this Medvedev match has just gone absolutely insane. You know, he was, you know, down, looked like he was going out in straight sets, down match point. Then it's crazy what happened. Some random cameraman, I've never seen this cameraman in my life as well, like, walks onto a court because you know.
But that's why I think he's a photographer. But that's why I remember I was telling you that I feel like that was probably his first time there, and he didn't know what was going on.
Because
everyone was shouting at me. I was like, guys, I don't think this guy has taken pictures at a tennis tournament before. Because come on, who would actually do that?
The etiquette.
Like, it was just
between serves on match point. Mad.
But Medvedev took advantage of that. He was like, alright, let me act like a fool right now. And it worked. Like, to me, I remember literally thinking about it, I was like, this is why for me tennis can't be a quiet sport. Like, look how entertaining that was. Like, he knew, Medvedev knew what he was doing. He was like, let me get into this guy's head right now. The crowd are drunk and having the time of their lives.
Us
at home were laughing. Like, what the hell is going on? That photographer's job is on the line. Like, literally, it was 20 chaotic things happening. That empire did not even know what to do anymore. And, like, it was crazy.
And my favorite thing was, like, so after that, you know, he argued with the umpire for like 7 minutes, broke the fourth wall, started talking to the camera, like, you know, he said, you know, I can't remember what he said, but he was like, you know, oh yeah, ask Riley Opelka.
It's crazy.
And, but then he, like, used it, as you said, he turned it around. It looked like he was going to win in the fifth set.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started feeling it. He cramped. And he was like shaking his hand. And so the crowd, like, everyone started just like shaking their hands. like people who were supporting him were like just kind of doing it every time he won a point. People who wanted him to lose were like taking the piss or whatever and doing it. So the whole crowd was just like, it was, like, I don't think I've ever laughed like more in a match. Like, and I was like, that was also like a reminder of Medvedev a few years ago, you know, on the same court when he was, you know, when the crowds were booing him and he was
just so, know that when you go to sleep tonight, I won because of you.
There's no greater sport, man.
Literally, honestly, that was like the first 4 or 5 days US Open, made no sense. I was like, this is actually crazy.
I like how you mentioned Osaka as well, Tamani, because I forgot Felix.
And
that set up his kind of end of year as well. So to be fair, a lot went on in New York.
The thing, that's what I'm saying. I was like, where do you even, like, so that's what I'm saying. I was exhausted after that. I was like, I can't do this.
We need to kind of breeze through this now. Like, so I've got here highlights from the WTA tour, just kind of highlighting the top players. So Keys, as we spoke about, she finished the season 37 wins, 15 defeats. I said it was a career year for her, obviously winning a Grand Slam. She did have wrist issues as well. She had a wrist injury.
That's true.
And that kind of hampered her after the US Open. She lost in the first round to Renata Zarazura.
Yeah.
And then sat out while the agent swing and then came back for Riyadh. Didn't win a match at the WTA Tour Finals, but she did play... No, she played two matches and then... I think she withdrew.
Yeah.
She had a close match against Anisimova, though. She was up.
Yeah.
In that match, but she did not end up.
I didn't really expect much. My thing is that I just feel like once you win a slam, like, you had to me, your season was great. I don't care. Like, there's literally people like were already counting out Coco after she won Roland Garros because of the early exit with Wimbledon. There were already people counting out Keys, same thing. And I'm just like, some people trying to even tell us that Amanda had a better year then. And I was just like, it's a grand slam. Like, it's completely different.
Like
it's win. So, like, for me, it was just like, when after Australian Open, I didn't expect anything from Keys. Mm. Same with Coco, especially with how strong her run was for the entire clay season. Like, grass, do you think I was thinking of Coco? I was like, no, you can relax. I don't even know why you're even back here. Yeah. Like, you know, like, just chill. Like, it was already draining. So, Yeah, man, it is what it is. Like, she won her slam.
Yeah, like,
do you think she's going to defend it?
Australia?
Yeah. Keys.
I think that's tough.
No.
Australia's one of those ones, though, is one. It's such a weird one to call. Like, it's weird. It's tough because, yeah, you just don't know who's playing.
Start of the season.
Exactly. It's literally anybody's.
Literally, yeah.
But yeah, just she finished the year like inside the top 10. So she finished the year number 7 in the world. Like, that is a very, very good year for Madison Keys.
Mm.
Coco Gauff as well. So her win to loss ratio was 48 wins, 16 losses. Like we said, now a 2-time Grand Slam champion.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think this has been a great year for Coco.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. 100%.
She was also kind of fixing her serve, which was
in the middle.
A crazy shout to do that before the US Open.
Days before.
Like, yeah. it's just literally.
And she won a 1,000 title as well
Wuhan
this year.
As well, coming into the WTA Tour final. Yeah. I do want to mention Keys also was also playing around with the serve.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I think at the start of the year and towards the end.
This year. But towards the end, there was. I feel like the change didn't. I don't feel like she had enough time to make that change happen. Mm. I saw more of the change at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
But towards the end of the year, I didn't really see. So maybe when she goes into Australian Open, we might see more
with
of
the
that
injury
change
as well. So yeah. It's tough. But with Coco again, like we said, she brought in Gavin McMillan. He's the biomechanic coach.
Yeah. Mm.
And I love the fact that she's kind of making these changes or looking to make these changes at such a young age. Like, mm-hmm. she's 21 years old.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yet she's serious about, you know, becoming a better tennis player. And like, she's very, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A solid, she finished number 3 in the world, 2nd year in a row.
Listen, like I said, you guys can keep on bringing up them double faults. She's still got that slam. I said it, if I have so many double faults and you can't take that slam away from me, you're fighting the wrong people.
She also said this year as well, which I did like and appreciate, the fact that the WTA Tour is so competitive.
It
like,
really is.
There's literally, you can't really say who's going to win from week to week. And that's what makes the tour exciting.
It really is.
Don't know if you have any feelings or thoughts about that.
My thoughts, this is so random, but my thoughts on like Grand Slam, winning Grand Slams, I think of this random like meme video of Naomi Campbell. It's so random.
Go on.
And she's like, it's one of those, like, I don't even know what show it is, but she's like one of those model shows, like you're like America's Next Top Model, whatever.
Classic.
And she's like, I have my career. You guys want what I have. I have my career. And when you win a slam, that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
You have your slam. Yeah. Like, that's what everyone in the world wants.
No, but it's true.
But with Coco, like, I think, like, it has been, like, it's a weird year because it's massive. As I said before, winning a second slam, enormous and crazy run. And mm-hmm. as you said as well, like, it wasn't just a slam. It was the clay season leading up to it. Two big finals. And then Wuhan, Wuhan was like low-key like one of her best tournaments ever, just the 100%. Way she played.
Solid. Was playing so well. Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Nah, so good.
Just killed them. But it was like, it was still weird because like you do think that when someone does like step up and win that second slam, especially like in her position where she was already a top 5 player, she's already settled, you think like they're going to kick on, right? And going to use that momentum to like continue going.
Yeah,
whereas that, you know, instead, like almost immediately she started having even more issues with her serve. So that was, I mean, obviously it was really, I mean, at times tough, like to watch,
mm-hmm,
you know, the US
mm-hmm.
Open was brutal.
Mm-hmm,
like, the, you know, she, I mean, in that match against Vekic when she was like crying on the court you'd never even see that from her.
Yeah.
But like, as you said as well, the fact that she was willing to like decided to make that change, you know, to she split with Matt Daly and hired mm-hmm. Gavin McMillan right before the US Open. There's the footage of her, like, it must have been like a couple of days before, and it's raining.
Raining
on the practice courts. No one else is there, but she's just doing her serve. You know, practicing her serve in the rain, and she tried to like play it down. Like, oh, it wasn't raining that much, but no one was out there.
I was thinking, girl, it was pouring out there. Like,
we were there. It was raining, but like it did. I do think it like showed that she's like serious about, mm-hmm. as you said, like improving as a player, and like there's pressure particularly when you're a top player to like just prioritize the next result,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that she had the foresight to think about like, you know, trying to change for the future. And I think that's what she should be doing at 21 years old. I know she's been on the tour for a long time, but like, yeah, that's what you should be doing. So like, although it was weird and up and down and there were tough moments, I think she's going to keep on, you know, progressing and improving. And yeah. And the crazy thing is like, if she can sort out the server as soon as she sorts that out, like, kind of the sky's the limit. You look at all the stats. And,
do you know what? And I'm going to say it again. Roddick, Andy Roddick, and I do listen to his podcast. Shouts out to the served. I said it before him, though. I said it to Lucy Tamani. I can't remember which episode it was, but I was like, Coco Gauff is going to be one of the most dominant servers on the WTA tour soon, like in her career, basically. She'll have a period where she is the most, she's basically the best server on tour. He said this about 2 or 3 weeks later, and I was like, if Andy Roddick's saying this, one of the greatest serves in tennis.
I mean, for me, it's like a lot of the things that she wasn't really good at before, she's in, like, do you remember the period where people were talking about her forehand? Like, they were going on and on. Now, they're out here talking about how great it is. So that's why I think for me, I've never really been worried, because I think maybe she's the type of player where it just takes her longer to get into certain places. So that's why even after a French Open, like, my expectations were not like crazy. Like, I was just like, all right, if we're on vibes after this, so be it. Because I think I've kind of gotten used to Coco just doing it at her own pace and stuff. And to me, honestly, I do feel like when she's a different space mentally, it really does help. And I think that's why she won the French Open as well. Aside from the fact that she had a really great game plan and played better, I think she was just in a better space mentally, which helped her win. Yeah. So, yeah.
And as an aside, I want to see Coco's playlist, some of her like Spotify playlist. You'll like this, actually. Like, earlier this year, like, I was talking to her about music, and she like collects vinyls, and she was telling me that like, she... Like, when she travels to tournaments, like, she'll just go and, you know, when she has time off, she'll go to be to looking at secondhand vinyls.
Yeah.
And,
sound like Lucy.
And I saw she was at Camp Flognor, which she now, it seems like she does that every year. And she was watching a guy called Dijon, which, an artist I like a lot.
I think did he not include her in a song or her name?
No, I don't know. But he just
Tyler did.
But yeah, Tyler did, and someone. I mean,
no, there was someone else recently that did.
I know the guy you're talking. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah, I can't remember the name, but there's someone. There was someone. Yeah, maybe I've confused it.
Yeah, I know the guy you're talking about, actually.
I want to see her playlist, basically. We have some music in common. She was just talking about how much she likes the internet, and
she's got great taste.
She does. Yeah. At least now with Tamani, we know that the players, where they like, I mean, we know that Draper listened a little bit to
Omi. Oh no, I don't think that's true. He was lying. He was, so like, the other thing was this is silly, but was talked with Pegula about. She said she listens to R&B.
I can believe that.
Griselda.
but when they were, obviously they played mixed doubles, and like in some, like, one of the interviews, like, someone asked him like about music, and she was like, yeah, I listen to SZA and this and that. And Draper was like, I have no idea who, like, wow. SZA. So that's why I was like, he's lying.
So you lied to me.
So I talked to Pegula about that, and she was talking about, like, before it became crazy, but we're talking about how much we love Folded by Kalani.
Oh, wow.
And she was like, she listens to R&B to relax her before matches. In conclusion, no, I think Draper was lying. I'm saying that.
Nick Jenkins, that's the artist.
Oh, that's the artist. That's it. Yeah.
But just on Coco quickly as well, she qualified for the WTA Tour Finals. That was her fourth year in a row.
Yeah.
Like, again, these things aren't like, I'm sorry, that is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is actually insane.
Yeah.
4 years in a row. That means she basically finished in the top eight.
But it's just, like, for me, it's just annoying how people don't realize that. Like, it's been frustrating this season watching people talk about Coco the way that they've been talking about her, and it's like, yeah, we should highlight it, but it's like, because I feel like I'm literally fighting myself, and I'm like, bro, like, towards the end of the season, you will actually think Coco did not collect a slam with the way people were going on. And I was just like, okay, what's your fame doing?
It's been a great year.
It's been a really, really great year.
Another player we need to talk about quickly, Jasmine Paolini, again, top eight. So she finished with 46 wins, 21 defeats. I again said this is a great year. She won Rome, like you mentioned, both singles and doubles. She also helped Italy defend the Billie Jean King Cup title. So they're now, I don't know how many times they've won it, but yeah, she's been heavily kind of involved in that team, or one of the main reasons why they've done so well in that tournament. Again, great year for Paolini. Yes, she didn't reach any Grand Slam finals this year.
Yeah,
she did win the French Open with Irani. Mm-hmm. But just in terms of her year again, like, just quickly for you, any kind of major standouts?
Yeah. I mean, Rome, winning Rome, the crazy achievement. And just the fact that obviously she had that breakthrough year last year, kind of, you know, came in a way out of nowhere. I mean, reaching two semifinals came out of nowhere and establishing herself, you know, top five player. But like backing that up is so hard. Exactly. And so the fact that she kind of, she came back and showed like that she's a top 10 player for real and a top player and not, you know, and kind of a force, that was massive. And yeah, with Rome beating Goff in the final and Billie Jean King Cup, yeah, it's big. So yeah, she's really kind of established herself at the top. And she had a tough like WTA finals. I think she was sick, but she was
fighting for her life. She was coughing on the court and everything. Like, it was crazy.
And again, that was her second appearance in a row. Both singles and doubles again. Like, so I feel like she's going to maybe cut down on the doubles, I think.
I don't think so. Said that. I don't think so. I told him that as long as Sarah is there, mm-hmm. she's going to
stop. I think so too.
And I don't think Sarah is going to stop, like, extra money in her bank account. And she's, you know, chilling.
We'll see.
Just an outlandish take for next year. What do you have?
You go first.
I go first.
I need to think.
Oh, shoot.
Your idea.
I actually think, this is very outlandish. I actually think we will have a different Grand Slam winner for the ATP.
Interesting.
I think Carlos will have a harder time defending his titles next year. I think.
I'm going to build off of that, and so we can mention someone we haven't. Artifice to win the US Open.
I'm not mad at that.
I want to end it right there. to be fair, he's the player I'm most looking forward to seeing again next year.
Oh, I miss him, man. Artifice. I actually miss him.
Outlandish take. I don't know.
Because my one was nearly there. My one last year was eager to not win any title this year. Till Wimbledon. I think I did okay.
I've not given it enough thought, so I don't really have anything. Okay. Sorry. Felix Auger-Aliassime. Felix Auger-Aliassime to win a Grand Slam. I'm gonna
to
say
to win
it.
A Grand Slam.
Yeah, fuck it.
Do you know which Grand Slam? It has to be hard. He has a way better hard court season.
Well, let's go Australia then.
Australia.
We're going from the top.
Okay.
Australian Open champion Felix Auger-Aliassime. And on that note. No, but guys, man, thank you.
We had to rush it out.
Yeah, that was.
Because of time.
But yeah, it's been a great year.
It has been a great year.
So yeah, man, just thank you again for, like, I guess, tapping in, like, with us throughout. Thank you, Lucy, for bearing with me and sticking by my side.
Free from tennis for the next what? Three weeks?
Exactly. Well, exactly.
You'll be watching Challengers.
The no off season.
Or futures even.
Thank you, Tamani, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Don't be ghosting us for too long.
I never ghost you.
But yeah, guys, that pretty much wraps up
2025.
Like, wow, what a year. Incredible.